Blog Talk Radio.
Can anybody hear me in the chat room? Can anybody hear me? Anyone hear me in the chat room? I'm talking now. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Test 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay, I don't know what's going on then. Hello, 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 hello. inhale. Hi, are you there?
Hi, Matt. How are you doing tonight? Is this the Zimmerman Show?
Yeah, hold on one second, okay? Hold on. Hi, Cheryl. Are you there?
I'm there.
Oh, good. And here's Michael. Michael, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. I didn't hear that my show will go live in 1 minute, so hopefully it... Oh, you did? Okay, good.
Yep,
I'm not
I
hearing
it. I just heard it. Yep,
okay.
I just heard it.
So when you hear her say, Blog Talk Radio, just say go, because I can't, for some reason, it's not coming up on my thing, okay?
Oh, sure.
When you hear it go,
I hope we don't run into a problem tonight. Do you have some other people lined up for your guests?
Well, Cheryl's here.
Oh, hi, Cheryl.
Hey, baby.
How are you?
When you hear her go, she'll go, your show will go live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then it waits like 10 seconds. And Blog Talk Radio, then let me know. Here we go. She should be saying it now. 5, 4. Is she?
No.
I'm on the page of your website, and it says 31 seconds till show. 29, 28.
Okay. I think we're on the air live now. Hold on. I think we're on the air live. Let's go to the chat room and see.
No, we're not, honey. It says 19,
sure?
18 seconds until show. Yep. I'm also on live at your page. 12 seconds.
Okay, now
11.
They can hear. Now they can hear us. Can you hear us now, Florida? Everybody can hear us? Can you hear us now? We're on. Yay. Something messed up. Let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you what happened. We get a countdown here on Blog Talk Radio, and I had like 10 minutes before the show goes, and all of a sudden this British woman comes on and says, your show will go live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And I'm sitting there with my thumb up my nose or other orifices. I didn't know what to do. So I checked the chat room. Nobody could hear me. And now it's live, so I have no idea how it's going to sound when it is put in, when you can go back and listen to it. So who knows? There might be like 10 minutes of dead air, and then us. Anyway, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. And, you know, even though I expected the not guilty verdict in the Zimmerman case, I don't feel gleeful or happy. It's just sad. I'm glad that George Zimmerman was found not guilty. I, in the beginning, thought he was very guilty. I wanted to be the one to put him away for good. I was disgusted with him, absolutely disgusted. And then, as I saw the evidence come out, I was more disgusted with myself. And two people that have been with us through the whole trial, Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Hi, Cheryl.
Good evening, dear.
And Michael in Minnesota, who you heard us chatting when we didn't realize we were on live. And let's go to Cheryl first. Cheryl, your thoughts. I don't even know. I really don't even know what to say. It's expected. And here's what I want to say. I am so thankful it's over. So thankful. How about you?
Well, I mean, I think it was expected. If, again, they went by the letter of the law. I mean, my feeling has been very, very clear from the beginning that it was the worst prosecution I've ever seen in my entire career. Mm-hmm. I will stand by that. However, the reality sets in that you've got Ms. Fulton somewhere tonight feeling what? I mean, mm-hmm. God in heaven, there would be nothing you could possibly say to her that's going to make sense. That's
right.
Going to make her better, that's going to give her any type of justice for her son, ever. And mm-hmm. I think the jury worked. I mean, Lord knows they worked hard. Five of them are mothers themselves. And again, you and I have said over and over, there are no winners. And mm-hmm. this proves it. There's not. And there's going to be fallout. There's going to be more fallout.
When you say fallout, what do you mean?
Riot. I don't mean riots and things like that, but this case isn't over. There's people that George is going to sue, then they're going to be so mad. Of course, they're going to go after Shelly, his wife, and if they go after Shelly, are they going to then go after Dee Dee? And if not, it just looks like another witch hunt. And, I mean, it's just, you've got one person that Angela Corey already fired because he leaked the information.
Oh, we got to talk about that,
turn around,
too.
And he's going to turn around and sue. And then mm-hmm. you've got people that are saying, hey, we stirred y'all all up, Al Sharpton for one, and now, we're kind of out of it, and we're telling y'all to calm down, and we've been peaceful the whole time. Okay, wait a minute. The police asked the judge, if the jury comes back this weekend, would you hold it till Monday or late Sunday? Give us time to have some daylight, first of all. Maybe mm-hmm. get religious leaders together, get other, civic and community leaders to stand with us. And no, she just refused to do that. Mm-hmm. Who in their right mind, and I've tried to be respectful to her somewhat, even mm-hmm. though she was clearly pro-prosecution the whole time, she's just pro-dumbass right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is nearly the midnight hour. On a Saturday night, people have already been drinking. People have already been bussed there. It's hot. They're tired. They're mad. They're hurt. You're going to have one idiot that bumps into somebody or says the wrong thing or says, oh, hey, sorry, Trayvon, and it's on.
Mm-hmm.
And the bleachers are going to clear. And it's for what?
Exactly. Why couldn't she wait? Why couldn't the judge wait in the name of everything that is holy to help the community, help them heal, give them time, everybody, to calm down? And I'm not saying it's everybody that's going to do this, but you're right. It's just going to take one drunken idiot on a Saturday night in Florida to do this.
Sure. To ride through and think, hey, let's ride to the courthouse. That'd be hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not saying anybody's going to do that. I am saying it is the perfect recipe for this to happen. Like
mm-hmm.
when you're drunk, it'd be funny. Hey, the first kid we see, let's call him Trayvon. Okay, that's
mm-hmm.
not funny. And then on the same token, you're going to have somebody 16 with somebody 23 with somebody 31 who thinks, hey, let's go avenge him. Let's go find the first white person we can see and
mm-hmm.
bust their windshield or push them into the street. We just had that in Atlanta not too long ago. And you think, why would she give them the best fuel for that fire that she could possibly give them. Tomorrow, you know, afternoon at 12, while church is going, let churches listen to it live together. Let them mm-hmm. pray for everybody involved, the jury, the judge, the Martins, the Fultons, everybody. She didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't do that at all. And so I think it's inexcusable.
Mrs. Norris brought this up, and I understand this point. First of all, perhaps the judge had faith in people. And second of all, maybe she really just wanted to let the jury members go home. I think I know what you're going to say, Cheryl, but I wanted to hear you.
She could have.
She could have.
Okay. Their duty's finished. If you have a verdict, you may go. And, you know, that she could call them back. The verdict wouldn't change if she let them go home.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to me. When you have faith in people, I've said I have faith in people. I've said it on your show. There are more good than bad.
Mm-hmm.
Good will win over evil. It does every time. I've said it to you. I've said it to Michael. But listen to me. There will be pockets of evil, and there will be bad things that happen. You know, you're not going to be able to save everybody, and 5,000 police officers can't control 60,000 people. So what I am trying to say is all the faith in the world is great, but when law enforcement comes to you and says, please hold this till Monday, there's no excuse in you knowing better. With all due respect, a judge lives in a certain neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
A judge has certain authority. A judge has certain, they live in a different world. They like to think they're street smart because they hear
mm-hmm.
it, but they certainly don't live among it. So, again, when law enforcement tells you, yeah, we have a plan, and we've got that plan kind of together, but we're going to need 6 hours
mm-hmm.
to get everything ready, and she would not afford them that.
I know,
it's irresponsible
right.
at best.
Well, real quickly, we had a poll thread open for just a short period of time, and 40.89% of the people thought not guilty, 35.47% thought manslaughter, 10.34% murder two, and a hung jury, 14.78%. I thought it was going to be hung. I really did. Let's go to Michael in Minnesota. Michael, you have been so good at keeping us updated and thinking of the questions that others want to ask, and I'm just too numb to think of them. What are your thoughts? I know this is what you were hoping for, and you probably, if I could put some words and feelings in your mouth, you're probably kind of feeling the same way we are, just sad.
Well, yes, I absolutely am, Tricia. However, it's not there's no glee for me at all, and not even for George Zimmerman. I had the opportunity to speak to some friends before we came on air, and they were talking about he showed no emotion when the verdict was read. But I said he has been so afraid through this trial of the outcome, but that fear of his is not lifted because he's been acquitted. It only deepens. Now, how do I keep my wife and family safe in a country that is rife with discord? And I don't believe his nightmare will end till he sets foot on soil in a desert somewhere in the middle of nowhere where he can't possibly be accosted. I don't know if he'll ever find peace. And that is as sad, if not, well, it's equally as sad as any other aspect of this trial.
Mm-hmm.
I really wished, I was so disappointed in the prosecution. I'm so disappointed in Angela Corey. I also had an opportunity to listen to her press conference, and she threw, talk about inflaming public opinion, she reiterated every reason why she thought George Zimmerman was guilty. He was acquitted. It's not the time to have that kind of talk. She threw their star witness, Dee Dee, under the bus, calling her uneducated. I just think it, this is not the time for that, I don't think.
Can I say one other thing?
Please. Yes, go ahead, Cheryl McCollum.
It's customary to not do that until you meet with the family. And it's also customary that the family should have, if they were able to, be with them and have the opportunity to thank Mr. Guy and company. And the fact that the family and their attorney left the building, she should have been very short, very direct. She should have thanked the jury for their service and basically said, we will respect their opinion and not taken any questions. This was not a press conference for that.
Well, and that is how her prepared speech went. It wasn't until the question and answer started that this all came out.
This is a woman that has other aspirations. Please don't miss that. I don't fault her for that. I'm just calling it like I see it. She sees herself going for a judgeship, federal maybe. She sees herself positioning herself as somebody that, you know, is going to move into another job.
Well, from what I saw, she sure won't be appointed to any Supreme Court in the near future, hopefully. Oof.
You know, you'd be surprised.
I don't know.
I can't imagine.
Cheryl, I had no idea what
mind,
you were talking about.
Michael.
Cheryl, I had no idea that the police had asked for time with her. That's unconscionable.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't allow at least the light of day, as you said.
Now, that's the judge, not Angela Corey.
I didn't mean Angela Corey. I meant the judge.
Oh.
I just can't believe.
Oh, there's no excuse, Michael.
There isn't.
I'm
you know,
shocked.
And I was talking to Sherry Jefferson right before I called in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Sherry made one of the best points ever. She said, Cheryl, think of the parents who earlier this evening dropped the kid off at a movie theater, and they don't even have time to go get them. Think about the kids that are on college campuses taking some summer school classes that maybe are in a majority one way or the other. Maybe they're not safe. Maybe they didn't have enough information to go home for the weekend. Maybe people are being placed kind of in these precarious positions that maybe they wouldn't if they had time to know, hey, the jury is going to be, you know, the verdict's going to be read at 1 o'clock on Sunday, not in the next 15 minutes.
No, exactly. Everybody get behind your locked doors, barricade yourself. I live in a quiet neighborhood, and there were fireworks and everything going off, and now I realize it was probably most likely a celebration, if you can call it. I hope not too, but I was thinking it was gunshots. I'm thinking, what is going on in my quiet townhome neighborhood?
I hope to God Almighty that wasn't what that was. Florida mom says there were fireworks here too. I'm assuming in Florida. That scares me and makes me sick. Nobody should be celebrating. I mean, George Zimmerman should be relieved, but nobody should be celebrating. There's a 17-year-old kid dead, a family that's devastated. This is not fireworks time. Oh, my God. Cheryl, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, I think, sadly, there will be pockets of people celebrating. You've got some people that think they understand the Second Amendment they're going to be celebrating, and you've got some folks, honestly, that think, I mean, all you got to do is look at Facebook. All you've got to do is look at some of these blogs, you know, and it's just shocking. I've seen people already change their profile picture to a saltine cracker. I've seen, you know, statements that I cannot imagine are coming forward in 2013. Again, I haven't heard the word cracker since the 70s. And so for that to make a comeback is just, I mean, really, y'all, I don't know. Nobody wins.
Tomorrow night on my regular show, we're going to talk the real meaning of the word cracker. Everybody thinks it's the slave owners cracking the whip. That's not the case, apparently. One of my amazing listeners/members of Web Sleuths knows all about quote unquote Crackers and sent me the information and the backup to back up what she was saying. And Crackers are actually a group. It's a group of people from Florida, and they've been around for hundreds of years. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. It was just so surprising to me, and so we'll get the cracker misconception cleared up as well. And you're absolutely right that Cheryl, there it is appalling what people are writing and what people are saying. I just had a friend text me that said, and she says the DA showed a passive aggressive attitude in her press conference. Did you think that, Cheryl?
I really did. You know, again, I'm always hesitant to try to go after somebody too hard. I don't think I would call it that. It was almost condescending. It was, I hate to use the word bitchy, but she just has this edge and this air about her, and she has the entire time. And it's like, I think the very first time you and I talked, Tricia, I said, and I firmly believed it then, I believe it now, that all of a sudden this woman is going to charge somebody with second-degree murder. She's mm-hmm. got police reports that say visible injury, grass and stains on his back. You know, she's got to counter that with what? So she's got to go against her own police department, which we saw pan out. She has mm-hmm. to go against, you know, her own medical examiner, which we saw pan out. She's got to go against these people. Well, you can't have veteran homicide detectives and, you know, the polygraphers and everybody else saying one thing mm-hmm. and only one prosecutor that sees it differently.
Right.
And again, for her to bypass the grand jury, somebody needs to call her out on that.
The way she made it sound was the governor instructed them to move forward.
Okay, let me say again, if the governor says, Angela, I'm going to take you out of Jacksonville, Florida, and send you to Sanford, I want this to go to trial. Okay, that's what I'm telling you. She's a puppet. She did what she was told to do. Now she will get the benefit of doing what she was told to do. That's what I'm telling y'all. My point is the people need to respond to the governor, just like people need to respond to that city manager. People need to play their position. And Angela Corey took an oath. And if you're telling me that oath means so little to her that she took a case to trial that she knew she did not have probable cause, she deliberately bypassed a step in the due process system, which would be the grand jury, because she knew good and well they would say, no. They mm-hmm. picked an all-female jury, five are mamas, and they came back clearly saying, didn't meet it, don't have it. So you can get on TV now and tell us how that jury was wrong and how mm-hmm. maybe they didn't understand the evidence. The evidence wasn't there. Those of us that watch this every day, every single state's witness became a witness for the defense. Mm-hmm. How does that happen? And if you're out for truth, well, you got it tonight. He didn't do it. Because
exactly.
Here's the reality, and we talked about it on this show, and it's not easy to understand this, but we have dissected this over and over, and it's what I was trying to say last night, that even if you start a fight, you don't have to die.
Now, here's the problem with stand your law. Or stand your ground. Stand your law. Stand your something. Okay, I get it. I understand the theory, and in theory it sounds good. But you got to know there might be some real scumbag people out there that will go and start a fight and
sure.
then pull out a gun and say, I thought he was going to
sure.
kill me.
Okay, let me address two things.
Okay.
They didn't even use stand your ground.
I know.
This was straight self-defense. But people need to understand there's two different things. There's two completely different things, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Self-defense and stand your ground are not the same. That's why Mark O'Mara was brilliant when he said, screw stand your ground, we don't even need it. We're going straight self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm telling you, when you look at some of these blogs and you look at some of the things on Facebook and you look at some of the things that are being tweeted, if people engage in mutual combat, who's ever losing can defend themselves. They can stop that threat. And I agree with you, Tricia. That's what I'm telling you. The way some folks are interpreting what happened today is, hey, all I've got to be is in fear of bodily harm. I don't even have to let you hit me.
Mm-hmm.
So we
exactly.
have to be very, you know, conscious of what could occur tonight and tomorrow and the months ahead.
I'm really, Tricia, I'm
ahead.
So surprised when you gave the Web Sleuth statistics of the poll.
Mm-hmm.
That is just shocking to me, having watched this trial. And I'm going out on a limb here. When the Martin family, when the Martin Fulton family didn't appear in court, I was thinking they saw the same trial as I, and they knew what the outcome was going to be. I don't believe it's unexpected. Do you think there's any possibility to that?
That is very interesting. So in other words, see, I was running around doing stuff on Web Sleuth, trying to get the show ready. So Trayvon's family did not show up in the court today for the verdict. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, that's real surprising. Could it be that they knew? They just didn't want to deal with it? Maybe they were somewhere and they couldn't get there?
Of course, cause
yeah,
we
were just speculating.
Sure. But
maybe they
that
were somewhere
the
and
first
they couldn't.
That...
Yeah, maybe they were somewhere and couldn't get there. I don't know. What do you think, Cheryl?
No, if they were 10 minutes away, 15 minutes away, she would have waited on them.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
I
they made it clear they weren't coming. It would have had to have been clear they weren't coming. Now, whether or not they were afforded another courtesy, that would shock me, because that's supposed to be read in open court for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they got a heads up. I think Michael might be close to saying they didn't want to do that publicly. You know, she has been, Ms. Fulton, and I've said this repeatedly and I will continue to say it, she has been regal almost in her posture, in her presence, how she has maintained composure. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how mm-hmm. you can talk about your child and it's no longer here. I don't know how you can, you know, do press conferences and sit in that
I don't blame them for not showing up. I think it
I
was
either,
like people are saying, I think it was,
point,
it was too hard. Right.
It may be time to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl, can I interject something
yes.
here? There's a person in the
sure.
chat room. She would like her messages, show me the evidence of the charges of willful false prosecution and other charges mm-hmm. of misconduct that you are leveling at this judge. And I believe she's talking about Angela Corey.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the judge. The judge made some reversible errors.
Right, we're talking
right.
about Angela Corey.
But again, okay, this is basically what I'm saying.
Please, Sleuth, if we're not talking about what you want, please just say it in the chat
yeah.
room. But I believe
okay.
she's talking about Angela Corey. So because you
right.
said the willful false prosecution and other charges of misconduct. So
Here's the deal. And I'll when you have such authority to bring charges yourself, which she does, she has the power to do that as a prosecutor, you still have to have probable cause. In this particular case, the lead investigator said it wasn't there. A second investigator, the female detective, said it wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
The chief of police said it wasn't there. The second chief of police, whose current chief, didn't bring charges either. The original DA's office for 44 days did not bring charges. It wasn't until Angela Corley comes in that, boom, we have a charge of second-degree murder, and we're not going to go to grand jury. We're just going to go to trial.
Can you
and
explain the hierarchy, Cheryl? How is Angela Corey? What is her position that enables her to decide what on a like in Sanford, what they should and should not prosecute. Who, what gives her that power? What is her title?
She
what is her role?
She is the prosecutor. So
she's the chief
happens,
prosecutor in that
yeah.
county or in the state.
No,
or what
for,
is that?
No, she's at Jacksonville. She was brought in as a special prosecutor, so she was in charge of just this case for this county. Okay, so what happens is prosecutors have the final say. So let's say law enforcement brings them a drunk driving case, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They get to review it and say, yeah, we think there's enough to go to trial. Let's send it and see if we can get, you know, a true bill from the grand jury to go to trial on vehicular homicide, let's say, DUI.
Now,
Is there
charges that could be leveled against Angela Corey for this?
Wait, hey, Michael, I want to hear Cheryl's explanation, and then we can have her answer that question. So, the drunk driver, and that's a great question, by the way, Michael. But I'm like very interested in this. Okay, drunk driver.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's okay.
Okay, so the attorney, they review what the police have, and they say, okay, what is vehicular homicide with a DUI, and they look at the elements of that crime, and they make sure that the police have it. Was the person that's being charged actually driving the car? Was
mm-hmm.
the person actually intoxicated? Do we have proof of that? If so, what is it? Is it the videotape for the dash cam? Did the officer smell alcohol? And then do we have a blood alcohol content? Do we have these things? If so, with the blood alcohol test, when's the last thing, the time the thing was calibrated? They're going to look at every single element and make sure it fits. In this case, again, when you have a detective come to you and go, yeah, there was no probable cause, and he passed a polygraph, and when he walked me through it, his story didn't change enough that it mattered to me. Okay, that's usually a no-brainer for the prosecution. Okay? They're not going to put something up that they know they have no probable cause. That's not ethical.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's very Duke LaCrosse-ish, and that's what I said on your show before. Whether anything is going to happen, whether people are going to see it, but you can't just have a witch hunt. You can't say, hey, we don't have probable cause. The detectives involved don't think he did it. We don't have one eyewitness. We don't have one ear witness. We can't get anything off the video, the voice recording, supposedly. We have an ME that doesn't remember anything, zero, nothing.
God, that was
the
hilarious.
Father said it wasn't him. The mother said it was. We've got his cell phone that doesn't look good. We've got a star witness. She could be a problem. His Facebook is a problem. His text messages are a problem. And she freaking goes to trial anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a problem. Again, it could be a problem.
Yeah, it could really be a problem. And I think that's a very interesting point about the Duke LaCrosse case. Like you said, this is Duke LaCrosse-ish. Okay, Michael, I apologize for interrupting you, but I just wanted Cheryl to finish that. What was your question? It was a great question.
It's not mine.
I can't remember.
It was posted in the chat room. Oop, it just disappeared. But the bottom line is, do you think that, I'll read it. If you are suggesting she did this without PC, I am wondering whether you think this is actionable.
Yeah, well, what I'm asking that person is, where's the probable cause with what I've said to you and with what came out in court? This is not my opinion. You have a lead investigator that said, yeah, I believed him. Yeah, Trayvon Martin's dad said it wasn't him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where's the probable cause? If you read the police reports, that's George's story. When you hear not just the videotaped walkthrough, but you also watch the interrogation for 5 hours. I've watched it. And here's what happened. The detective in the five-hour interrogation before they go out to the scene gives him the name of the street. He says, oh, you're talking about View Circle?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, yeah. He gives it to him. So again, when Mr. Guy says he lied right there. How can you not know the street the night you're on 911, but you know it the next day? Well, A, that's called recall.
Yeah.
I've been on your show, Tricia, and I said, oh, God, I can't remember the prosecutor's name. That doesn't mean I don't know it. It means I can't think of it right now. And again, George was in trauma, whether people want to accept that or not. He was.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he might have had a hand in the wheels of that being turned, he still had something happen to him.
Now, something that's being talked about in the chat room that I think helps to understand where people who are not happy with this judgment or acquittal, anyway, they're thinking that the shooting of a child is probable cause enough. But the problem is they're not seeing the whole picture as George was having the shit kicked out of him, and he needed to defend himself. Am I missing
Here's
something?
Here's the deal.
Is that
you're
the
not
probable
missing anything.
Cause?
Right. Well, you're talking two separate things.
Okay.
Legal.
And again, I'm just trying to pass on what's being spoken.
No, no, I'm with you. I'm good. I'm happy. Legal versus your heart. Okay? My heart flat tells me that George Zimmerman should have never got his butt out of the car. He didn't need to take an effing gun to Target. He did not need to follow, look for an address, walk around with a flashlight in the rain in the dark. He should have passed somebody standing, and he should have passed him and gone to Target, period. That's
and maybe
my heart.
Called the
now,
non-emergency number and said you may want
to
check something out.
Go to Target. Let somebody stand in the freaking rain if they want to go to Target. Is my heart, Michael. But legally, I have to accept that George could park that car and get out of it. Legally, he can take a gun to Target. Legally, he can walk in the rain and follow him. Legally, he can say, hey, what are you doing around here? Legally, he can do all of those things. It doesn't make it smart. It doesn't make it right. But let me flip it. Any of your folks in the chat room right now that are female and 21 and over, they can go right now to a bar alone. They can get drunk, and instead of driving home, they can choose to walk. They can legally do all of those things. It's not the smartest thing. So if they were to be assaulted, people would say they played a role in that. They would then be blaming the victim. We're going to see that here. People are blaming Mr. Martin because he had on a hoodie in the dark, in the rain, standing in front of a house that was not his own. They're going to blame him that when he had the 4 minutes to run 70 yards, he did not. They're going
right.
to blame him, even though that's not right either.
Exactly.
But legally.
Legally.
Yes, and that's the hardest pill to swallow.
It
yeah,
is. We
I
do
see
have
what
some
you're
callers.
Saying.
We do have some callers who have been holding quite a while, and I want to get to them.
Sure.
So please, everybody, hold on. I will get you. I'm going to go to area code 404 first, area code 404. You're on Trisha's True Crime Radio. Do you have a question, comment, thought, emotion? Tell us, please.
Hello, this
Hello.
Is Dwayne from Atlanta.
Hi, Dwayne.
Hey,
what's going on?
Hey, I just want to point out one thing. Cheryl and I have been friends for a while, so I think this is one bigger case with Trayvon Martin that society played a big role into a rush to prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
As being a criminal justice professional for a long time, when society pushes prosecutions to try to convict somebody of a crime when law enforcement is not ready and doesn't have all the facts, this is what you end up with.
Yeah.
If you take
Amen.
A look at the Duke case, you take a look at this case, big rushes, and then when the truth is finally found out, there's a lot of people hurt on both sides. I think injustice was done on both sides tonight because the rush to judgment and the rush to prosecute hurt what
I agree.
Society
well
to
said.
Learn the real truth is.
Yeah, well said.
Very well said, and it
no,
goes
Dwayne's
to...
absolutely right, and he's
Go ahead,
a
Cheryl.
well-known police officer in Atlanta, worked undercover. He's done some miraculous things. I don't know if he wants me to give his whole name or not, but he's absolutely right, and it's something we've talked about on this show. Don't hang up, Dwayne. Is that, you know, with Duke Lacrosse, they only told us the story they wanted us to know. This poor young dancer comes to perform with this, you know, team, and they all assault her. Well, then, of course, you figure out, wait a minute, she's alleged this before, and it was unfounded. One of the players was across town and seen on the ATM video. He wasn't even there, and he stayed in jail a year. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and this is one of those things that the more that came out, and everybody kept wanting to say, child. Okay, well, here's the reality. The reality is, again, and I've said this before, if this was flipped, he would have been charged as an adult. That's how we see him. He was 17, but he was living in his 18th year. If anybody goes to a high school football game, stand on the sideline and look at the 17 and 18-year-olds. They look like grown men, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Trayvon Martin, unfortunately, being 6 feet tall in a hoodie, you know, either way it goes, you might give him a second look because he doesn't look like a kid, like a little kid. He
mm-hmm.
certainly does not look like the picture we were originally shown when he was 12.
Exactly.
So a lot of us felt duped. A lot of people.
I did. I was so angry when I realized it. And I'm just trying to find a quote here that somebody posted on Web Sleuth, and it was so beautifully written, and I'm not going to be able to come close to saying it, and I can't find it. But basically what it said was what this person learned was the media is malicious and vicious and will stop at nothing to get a story for ratings. And that's what this poster learned, and me too. I finally get that. I used to think it was, oh, every once in a while, yeah, they might go a little overboard and be irresponsible. No, they don't care. They'll edit a tape, they'll make up a story, and they'll keep talking about it even though it's been proven wrong, all of that. But
absolutely.
Dwayne, I'm glad you're here with us, and thank you for holding so much, or so long, I mean. You've done a lot of police work, and you've obviously been in court a lot, I'm going to assume. I would like your opinion as a police officer. Two-part question. Have you ever seen anything that comes close to this where a special prosecutor comes in and ignores everybody? And number two, do you feel, as somebody in the law enforcement community, that there is actionable charges that can be brought against this special prosecutor?
I don't. I think it's a special play. When you bring in a special prosecutor, that's telling you that everybody else has kind of divorced themselves of it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the other plays I see is when they say we're going to go federal with this case and let the feds take the hit. Because just like Cheryl said, and Cheryl and I have talked a lot about this case, there was no probable cause. I mean, we only
right.
have one person's testimony, and we know that he's never going to take the stand, period. So you, as the state, have to prove, beyond a reasonable doubt, that they were going to meet murder two charges.
Mm-hmm.
No way, because you can't talk to intent. I mean, he had no intent. Actually, law enforcement did the right thing by letting him run out and letting him talk. I've worked on some other investigations before with homicides, and we purposely let the person go out because they think that they beat it, they're going to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And if they tell us more, eventually the stories won't match up. But, you know, I don't think that you can prosecute on this, but I think it's sad when you look at what the what the prosecution put up. They didn't coach their witnesses. They had no idea what they were going to say. They just pulled them off the street and said, hey, today, medical examiner, come on in and talk to us about this case, and we're going to hand you some
evidence. Right.
And when you do that, that just shows so much doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And Cheryl made the perfect point when she said, hey, there's no stand your ground. It's self-defense. And self-defense is such a higher standard. But when you go to a rush to judgment, and, I mean, we had the same case here in Atlanta with the Ray Lewis trial. It was a sensational, I want to get on TV, I want to show what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And the law is not built to do that. Justice is blind, and she has scales. And if the law is the law.
Right.
So.
Exactly right. And I, you know what, that's perfectly said, Dwayne, absolutely. And I found the quote. It's from somebody called Hopeful One. I love that name. And she said, quite honestly, the biggest lesson I learned from this trial is that the media is ruthless and repulsive. They will try to change present history and future, all for the benefit of ratings. It's truly frightening. That is well put, Hopeful One. And maybe, just maybe, perhaps there might be some reflection in the media, if we can hope and dream, in the powers that be and say, you know what, we can't do this anymore. It's absolutely wrong. Hey, Dwayne, can you hang on? Because we may want to come back to you and ask.
I have a question for Dwayne. Can I ask
yes,
him?
Yes, please. Please go right ahead, please.
Dwayne, in your years in law enforcement, have you ever investigated or been the lead investigator in a case where something similar like this happened, where you said there is no probable cause, I believe this guy acted in self-defense, that a prosecutor has said, no, we're going to prosecute it anyway? Or do they take your word as the lead investigator?
I know that Cheryl can also answer this because we kind of worked in some of the same jurisdictions. I've always been blessed with great prosecutors that said, you're my lead that I'm going to put up on the stand, and if you don't feel comfortable with it, I don't feel comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And normally it just came down to time. Time is the issue when you're trying to put this information together. We don't have all the pieces because we only get one shot with double jeopardy. Mm-hmm. And that is the same reason that we always try to get these Loctite cases, and they don't move as fast for the media. I read an interesting article with the former chief of police for Sanford, and he had his interview, I think it was up on CNN, and he stated that the mayor released the 911 tape so they could identify who was on there, let them listen to it, the families, together. And I'm like, that goes against the first rule of investigation.
Of course.
Yeah.
And, I mean, because everybody's going to say, yeah, that's him.
Sure.
Yeah, that's him. And instead of bringing them in one by one into a police station, and when mayors, councilmen, which I've had before, try to find out information, I just point blank tell them, you're not law enforcement. You cannot jeopardize this case.
I apologize, Dwayne. I've got a little scoop here, and I'm scooping my jaw off the ground because I did not know this. They actually said, we released it so the families could identify it.
Tracy, don't you remember?
I don't remember
that.
You know what? You know what?
But we talked about it one night.
You're right.
And
it's coming back.
He gave Ms. Fulton the courtesy.
That's right.
That doesn't happen ever.
That's just,
and let me just be even as clear as I can be with what Dwayne is saying. If I'm a prosecutor, which of course I am not, y'all all know that, but if I were, Dwayne is my case. So if he tells me, hey, I got nothing, guess what? We got nothing. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Dwayne, I've listed on your show more than once the prosecutors that I've also been blessed to work with. There was never a question if there was any doubt of the probable cause or any doubt. First of all, I'm not going to go get a warrant, and neither is Dwayne, if we don't have probable mm-hmm. cause. A judge shouldn't give it to me. That it shouldn't happen if I can't stand up and swear under oath already that this is what I'm doing and this is why and this is what we've mm-hmm. got and I know it to be accurate and true. Come on. That's what I'm telling you. This whole thing from jump was not right, and you've got families in Florida that have had loved ones murdered 2 years ago that have not seen the inside of a courtroom, and that's not fair either. Because there's another mama that has another Trayvon Martin, and she's gotten zero justice, zero publicity. And it's like I've said before, there was another young man killed after Trayvon in the back seat of a car for playing music. Remember?
Oh, that's right.
Nobody can tell me his name. Nobody's wearing a T-shirt. So, come on.
Absolutely right.
We need to get our priorities right and stop giving one victim all the power in the world to fuel all of this when we really need to look at ourselves and go, wait a minute, why is this one not as important? Why is the one 3 weeks ago not as important? Why are the 1,000 in Chicago not as important, Mr. President? And again,
amen.
Where are you tonight? Because I've said it before, but a beer summit ain't going to get this done. We need real leadership, and we need real honesty, not just more, hey, are you going to take that? You know, you look like Trayvon. Are you worried about walking the street? Hey, guy, you look like a crazy-ass cracker. Are you worried? Stop it. I mean,
amen.
That's not appropriate from anyone.
Somebody
I mean,
was trying to ask a question.
I'm sorry.
Is that Dwayne? Go ahead, Dwayne.
The last time I checked, the statutes of limitations for murder is never. Mm-hmm. It's endless. So if we're really rushed for a prosecution, especially on murder cases I've worked on, before I even go get the warrant, establish all this probable cause. We know who the people are. That means we spend more time because this is a case in our society that we take very seriously in murder and rape and cases like this that we invest more time in. This isn't he stole a car or something else where it's got short statute of limitations. This is a serious crime. And therefore, serious crimes, we allow ourselves more time to investigate to get to the truth.
Right. And, well, here's the problem with this, though. They did investigate it, and they did get to the truth, and it didn't matter. They went forward anyway, and that's so
right.
frustrating. We have a – and let me just put out the number here. I would love to hear an opposing viewpoint. I really would. It's 760-825-0933, as long as we're polite and adult. I'm the only one that gets to act like a child and do immature things. Everybody else. You have to behave. Let's go to area code 661. You've been holding a long time. Area code 661. You're on Trisha True Crime Radio. Hello? Oh, lovely. Lovely, lovely. Okay. I knew it. I just had a feeling.
They held a long time for that.
They did. They did.
Okay.
Oh, yay. Oh, joy. Okay. Michael in Minnesota. Anything else going on in the chat room? Do you have any other thoughts and suggestions, ideas, and questions? I'm open, my dear.
Well, I was really when Dwayne answered my previous question about he's enjoyed good relations with the prosecutors, and if he said there's no case, they've respected his judgment. I mean, amen, that's how it's supposed to work. And that is why we all were scratching our heads when the prosecution was putting up all their witnesses, and we kept wondering, these are turning into defense witnesses. They had to know that this was how the outcome was going to, what the outcome was going to be. I can't figure it out. For the life of me, I can't figure it out. It seems like it was all just a show to placate people to think we did put this to trial and let the jury decide rather than just letting him walk knowing what they knew and we now know having heard the evidence. I find it shocking. I just find it all shocking. But
well,
thank
the whole
you,
thing
Dwayne.
Is shocking.
It's extremely shocking. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Dwayne.
No, Dwayne, go ahead, honey.
We've talked forever. We want to hear from you.
It's extremely shocking because, you know, the part of the grand jury protects prosecutors. So if it's a circumstantial case, in other words, it's close, you go to a grand jury. The only people that can testify in the grand jury is law enforcement, people for it, to establish whether there's enough to go to trial. The Zimmerman case should have been ran to a grand jury, but the grand jury make a decision with the evidence that would have been shown there. If they would have come back and said, no, you ain't got enough, that would have been a clear sign not to start this case. Because you can still go back.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is now they went out with a circumstantial case, put it out there, they didn't prove their case, and now we're waiting on a powder keg of what's going to happen next. My brothers and sisters in law enforcement are worried what's going to happen. Is it going to be another Rodney King? Is it going to be, you know, what's going to come of this?
Right.
Because of a rush to judgment by people who should, by their legal training, understand
whether they had a case or not.
Exactly right. Absolutely right. And I'm sure, like you said, everybody in law enforcement is thinking, you know, is this going to happen in my jurisdiction? Let's do hypotheticals, because I believe, if I interpret this correctly, Angela Corey was kind of saying, if you read between the lines, and correct me if I'm wrong, the governor made me do it. Was she kind of saying that a little bit? Cheryl?
I mean, I guess.
Okay, go ahead.
I just heard her basically retrying the case, giving everybody sound bites, so when they go around tonight angry, they just reiterate the same thing over and over and over. But he killed a child. But he killed a child. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he did. But that doesn't mean that was illegal.
I see. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
A 17-year-old can beat you up with very little effort if you can't fight back.
Well, boy, yes, absolutely. My point is there a possibility, and I don't even know who would investigate, I don't know who's left to investigate it, but you know, maybe there's a journalist out there who wants to find out what the hell really happened here. Could there be an investigation where maybe we, lift off the lid into these dark back rooms, open the doors and let those sunshine laws shine in, and maybe we'll find the truth? Or is it just going to be swept under the rug? What do you think, Cheryl?
I think people want this over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they want to open up any more wounds. I think they want to start to heal. That's what I think.
Well, I think you're right, but I also think a way to heal, and I agree with you, Cheryl, I think that's exactly what people think, but I think a way to heal also is to find out the truth. Maybe some time needs to pass. Now, in the Duke LaCrosse case, we were talking about that earlier, where the men were accused of raping and doing all these horrible things to this mm-hmm. dancer, they got a very, for what they went through, they did get a good semblance of justice. I mean, nothing will ever make up for what they went through, but the prosecutor was charged and convicted. They got an apology from the governor and a total, you know, absolutely not guilty. There is nothing there. They're totally innocent. And that's the best case scenario in a horrible situation like that, is for the right people to do the right thing. I don't ever see that happening here. But
no.
I do think there might be some good, just a little bit of good come out of this, that the next time there's something that is painfully obvious to the investigators and to everybody involved, a prosecutor, even a special one, will think twice about doing this after seeing what happens when you're put on the trial is put on nationally. Dwayne, I have a feeling in my heart and soul that you want to say something, or am I just making it up? Is it the chili I ate tonight? I don't know.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, you did bring up a point, but there's a point that's often missing from the studies. I'm also working on my doctorate degree in criminal justice, so I do a lot of victimization type things. One thing that people forget about the Duke LaCrosse case is that there's this thing called Google in the internet, and those gentlemen that are searched on there, they're going to be seen as rapists.
Oh, gosh,
they're
that's right.
That's the first things that are going to come up on them, even though that they're innocent.
Right.
And can I live with that tag?
It'll be attached to their names. Oh, my gosh, I didn't think of that. You're right.
But, Tricia, let me interject. They not only lost their scholarship at Duke, they missed a year of school. They missed a year of their life. Their family had to spend a fortune mm-hmm. on defense attorneys. Now, here's another thing that occurred. Two of the young men wanted to go to Ivy League colleges, to law school. They weren't mm-hmm. admitted to some of the schools they wanted to go to because they had an arrest record for a sex crime.
Now, can that be expunged?
It can be expunged, but when they were applying to law school, it's there. And like Dwayne is saying, that's forever. So
that's
one of the young
just
men.
Tragic.
It is tragic, but that's what I'm telling you. It's not like this doesn't follow you. It's not like anybody's going to say, hey, George, why don't you apply to our police department today? You're an innocent guy walking around.
Yeah.
We've already said, where can George possibly go? What can he possibly do for a living? What
can
he possibly do?
Yeah.
I can give you a classic example of this. Do y'all remember the Atlanta bombing for the Olympics?
Of course.
Richard.
Someone by the name of Richard Jewell, I trained as a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
He actually came.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to apply to different departments. When the FBI got so overzealous, thinking when he was actually trying to get people away and was finally accredited for saving lives, when he was exonerated, there was no department in the metro area that would touch him.
He did die, yeah.
He died. I think he died of a heart attack.
When he was working for Sonoy Police Department.
And these things just follow you around, and they don't realize that so many lives are impacted. So when this jury name gets out, every one of these women are going to be impacted, one side or another. And it's going to be ugly to heal from this case. And this shows what happens when you have a zealous prosecution. Even if the governor would have said, me playing hypothetically the prosecutor, the governor said, I need you to prosecute this, I would go, no. I'm the one that has to bring the charges, not you, governor. If you want to appoint somebody else, you can appoint somebody else. But that's what it really has to boil down to, because it's, you take a law, you take an oath. I think Cheryl said it earlier. You swear an oath to uphold the law.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
And the law doesn't say 17-year-old, it changes. No.
We have a question here from the chat room. This is an interesting one from Ranch Hand. And the question is this. What are your thoughts about the state charging second-degree murder when they obviously had no evidence to support that charge? Is overcharging okay if it helps get a conviction? Let's not take it in this case because we know it wouldn't. But let's say you have a case and you know the person is guilty of manslaughter. I'm asking you to put on your prosecutor's hats, Cheryl and Dwayne. Would a prosecutor think, you know what, I'm going to overcharge them? That way they'll think they'll come to some sort of, you know, kind of a compromise with this lesser charge, which I really think they're guilty of. Does that go on, really?
No.
Dwayne?
The only way that you'd ever do that is if you thought you could get him to plea.
And I was going to say that. It's in a witness room, and it's a stunt.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the deal. You charge somebody. You have to basically meet those elements. The reason they charged second degree, in this case, I'll go ahead and answer it, it was political. They wanted the word murder there. They didn't want manslaughter. They didn't want aggravated assault. They didn't want it.
And Angela Corey said that it was his verbiage he used that they believed showed the willful and
spiteful. But she also said that common sense showed it was him screaming. Well, common sense says the guy getting his ass kicked was screaming.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And common sense tells you when Jason comes out of his apartment and screams, stop, I'm going to go call the police, and Trayvon doesn't even slow down the punches, he's not the one in need of getting away.
Mm-hmm.
Or in need of help.
So I think for her to, again, say something about common sense when the jury has just done the job that they did was unfair and was directed at them. I think they used common sense because they obviously saw through their BS when the prosecutor stands up and says, hey, vote with your heart. No.
Yeah.
Vote with the law.
You don't
vote with your heart. If we all voted with our heart, good Lord, you know, half the people I know should be in jail for something.
Absolutely.
Your heart has nothing to do with this. And that's why I'm very, again, impressed that six women were able to do this, because it was all that we even talked about on this show. To get six women to agree is not easy.
And here is
and
a question
to play
about
on their emotions also.
Right.
Yeah,
and their
right
mothers. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely, Michael.
Any callers?
We actually have a question here in the chat room, and it's an idea. and I want to follow it up with another question. Should the jurors try to give an anonymous press conference? Let me follow that up. Eventually, their names are supposed to be released. Is there any way there can be some sort of special, I don't know, dispensation where they don't release their names just in this one case? So anyway, anonymous press conference for the jurors, good idea, bad idea? Let's start with Dwayne.
Extremely bad idea. They served their role. They did what the judge charged them with. They listened to the judge's charges for what the elements were for the case of the crime. They made the decision. There you have to stick. They stick with their decision, and they go on. If they keep saying, if they can't try to justify what they're going to say to the public, that just gives the media every chance to turn it around on them and make them look like the villain.
Mm-hmm.
They're not
Got
on
it.
Trial here. They're just a jury.
And Cheryl, answer
Amen.
That question. Amen. That's your answer. And the follow-up question, is there any way we can keep these poor women anonymous? Make sure their names do not get out there.
No, it's public record.
There's
Why
no way
it
we
have
could
to be. I was
yeah.
actually. I'm glad you asked that question, Trish, because that was on my mind as we this whole conversation
Listen.
Was going. What is it about our legal system that says the names of jurors has to be released? That's ridiculous.
Because again, it keeps everybody honest, Michael. And here's the deal: courthouses are open. Courthouses are public places. If Monday morning you want to go to your local courthouse and sit through a trial, you can. It shouldn't be a secret. If somebody has committed a crime, whether it's, let's say, child molestation, you need to know who's living next door to you way before we had a registry.
Yeah, but we're not talking about the players in the case. We're talking about the finders of truth.
Okay, but let me go further. There was
they should
a time
be cloaked behind a drape and kept private for their life, I think.
But I know what Cheryl's going to say, so go ahead, Cheryl.
There was a time in this country we basically had professional jurors, and
mm-hmm.
the sheriff would just gather up the same old folks that were always going to vote with whatever the prosecutor said. That's not okay. And when it's a jury of your peers, again, this needs to be public. This needs to be open, and this is why our system is the greatest in the world,
Oof.
Period. We don't hide. We don't have secret meetings. We don't get to vote in secret and then run out. No. That's why even after the verdict was in, they have to say one by one, yes, that's my vote. That's my decision. Yep, that was me. That's what I voted. Because, again, nobody can threaten you. Nobody can say, well, that ain't what I wanted. They forced me. No. You take an oath as well. The jury swore to uphold it, and they did. And they're going to be fine. And let me just remind everybody, the new Black Panther Party aside for a minute, with all their threats and posters, and they're offering $10,000, one, that shows the financial state they're in, but two, listen to me carefully. George Zimmerman was alive and free for 44 days, and nobody laid their hands on him. The last
mm-hmm.
year, he's been on house arrest. Obviously, he's been to the grocery store once or twice. He's eaten out once or twice. Or delivery people have come to his house every freaking day. The man's gained 100 pounds. So he
right.
ain't been hiding. He's been safe. I honestly believe nobody is going to risk their own freedom and, you know, backlash of their own family to, quote, get at this man. Now, prison, I believe, would have been a different story. But I think George and his family are going to make some drastic changes. But again, for the most part, everybody has behaved beautifully for a year, and I just pray it lasts.
I'm going to take some callers right now. We're going to go to, by the way, I have my finger on the disconnect button, and I have your phone number, you little weenie. So if anybody tries anything, I'll hang up. So there, I'll show you. Area code 770. Area code 770. You are live on the air with Cheryl McCollum. Dennis and Michael in Minnesota, we're talking about the George Zimmerman verdict, 770. What is your question or comment?
Hi, Tricia. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for
you
everybody
bet.
Who is on the panel.
Thank you.
As I've listened, I've come up with a couple of other points.
Okay.
770, first of all, happens to be a Metro Atlanta area code,
mm-hmm.
and so all of us lived through the 96 Olympic bombing and the persecution that was Richard Jewell. after all this happened. And that's why you will find a post on the verdict thread where I have recommended for civil representation that George and Shelley seek out Lynn Wood. Lynn Wood makes me crazy on a professional level.
Don't even get me started with that guy. But
yeah,
he did do one good thing.
But the man is an absolute rabid pit bull when it comes to taking care of his clients. And that's what George and Shelley need. You know, after,
agreed,
what,
yes,
16 months now of being called everything but a child of God and a few things less than a child of God. Mm-hmm. You know?
Absolutely,
so,
right.
Can I ask the caller a question?
Sure.
Yeah.
Caller, do we know each other?
I don't know. We might. Where are you?
Okay, you sound, I'm in Atlanta. You just sound very familiar.
Well, we may have crossed paths. I don't know, because I worked on the civil side of things for almost 20 years. And I'm, believe me, I'm salivating for the Andrea Sides, the Snyderman trial. But that's
Trisha's,
a whole other subject. So.
Trisha's True Crime
anyway.
Radio, bringing friends together that didn't even know it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I think I know.
Anyway, 770, continue.
I'm at least going to go see that creature once in person. But anyway, that's a whole different thing.
Okay.
I'm technologically challenged enough, I couldn't figure out how to get in the chat and ask you this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. The thing that I was also glad to hear Amira say while I was trying to get in the chat and then on hold is that they are going to strongly recommend that George defend himself against any and everything. Now, the next civil, by the way, and probably the feds are going to try and bring civil rights charges, but that's a whole other bottle of wax.
I hope not. I don't think they will. No, I don't think they will. I don't think they care.
I don't know. It, you know, the unfounded rumors, and I'm going to leave it there, Trisha.
Okay.
And nothing would surprise me in this. But let me tell you something that where my civil experience may come to bear on this specific case, and particularly everybody's favorite special prosecutor, Angela, is it Corey or Corley?
Corey.
Corey. Anyway, whatever the heck her name is. I happen to be in a multi-defendant, multi-million-dollar mediation, mm-hmm, sitting in Tampa the 11th of April last year when they finally flipped on the TV late in the afternoon when she was to announce her charges. And, of course, everybody, you know, of course, we're all defense people, but everybody's jaw hit the table when she announced murder, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you guys are insane. You know, now, I think that, you know, the other piece to come out that she, you know, since her persecution of the IT guy, and that's another subject I'll bring up, but after all that started up, she then spends almost $350K of public, mm-hmm, money to enhance her pension and Richard, whatever the hell his name is, that was the lead prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else.
Right.
There are, what I learned, I had probably 1, 2, 3, 4, I had 5 of the senior civil defense attorneys sitting around that table after we all picked our jaws up after the charging. And I got quite an earful about the reputation of Ms. Corey.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before Governor Rick Scott decided she was his golden child. Of
okay.
course, I was trying not to heave in my trash can listening to her in her press conference tonight. But
mm-hmm,
I'm going to tell you something. This one is going to be really happy when this woman is either behind bars or disbarred. And I have gotten emails tonight from 3 different very senior Florida attorneys that she's done.
I hope
done.
You're right.
Because
I
all
hope.
High,
excuse, thank
it, you. Excuse the part. Excuse the parlance, but all the hide the weenie stuff. And, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, I mean, they've been playing fast and loose with discovery the whole way. We knew that. They had the right judge and this crazy Judge Nelson, and don't get me started on that. I've asked for an email how to complain about her. But that's another story, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get past all of that, and, you know, I'm like, wait a minute. This guy uncovered all this crap in January. You know, you have a hostile work environment. Because when it then is reported, you immediately put him on administrative leave, and you wait another week to get the information of the defense.
And you fire
She's
him
dead.
Eventually. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
She's dead.
Go ahead, Dwayne.
This is the scary part of it. She's going to pull the prosecutor. She's going to take the prosecutor's immunity, and she's going to say that she just took the facts from the case, and she can't be.
Well, that's what she's going to have on.
The only thing that's going to hurt her.
She will, but you know something? I have a feeling that this guy erased his. If this guy erased his computer, there's an email trail.
Well, I'm saying that the worst thing that's going to happen to her is she's going to lose her bar card, and I think the best that she can hope for is this is how she's ever going to go.
She's done her career,
she's done, and, you know, but she's definitely going to hide behind, hey, I was just given the facts of the case, and I did the best job I could to vigorously try them, and I did the best I could, and this is the way the jury voted.
And then she'll get
a sweet job teaching law school.
Oh, I hope not. I hope the caller from Atlanta, thank you. That was a great call.
I hope she's absolutely
right in that she is through. I mean, it sounds like she's kind of connected in the lawyer area in Florida and in that lawyer underground, you know, that secret underground where they gossip. Anyway, kind of sounds like maybe there might be more trouble on the horizon professionally for Angela Corey, and I don't think anybody here would feel sorry for that at all. Okay, we're going to try another phone call here. This is area code 302. You're on the air with Cheryl McCollum and Michael from Minnesota and Dwayne. We're talking about the George Zimmerman verdict. Area code 302. Go right ahead.
Hi, Tricia. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for your law enforcement guests.
That's Dwayne.
One of the things that has concerned me is the police officers that were affected negatively by this investigation, et cetera. The police chief is outed, and then Detective Serino, who obviously did a very, very good job, is now in parole and probation or something.
Demoted.
What do they have a recourse for this or no?
Interesting question.
So political. Something
should be done. Let's start with Cheryl McCollum, and then we'll go to Dwayne. Cheryl, what do you think?
Well, I was going to defer to Dwayne, but I've already talked about that on this show. And, yes, the chief is going to sue, especially now. He's got great, you know, speed now to get his lawsuit going, as well as any of the officers that were, you know, without cause, demoted, put on foot patrol, given third shift, you know, rank reduced, anything like that that happened when they uphold the law. They did the right thing. And, you know, and I felt very, you know, drawn to Serino when he was talking. You could tell that this man was hurting, not just because he had to work this terrifically horrid case. It's never easy to give a death notification, much less let a father listen to that tape and work that. But like I said on the show, he had no reason to lie about what Mr. Martin told him.
Right.
About who was on the thing, and it hurt him with his peers in the department.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he
You're
was
right.
screwed either
yes.
way.
Yeah, so you think he'll file a suit, and he has legitimate cause to do that and legitimate cause to take action. Dwayne, what do you think?
Will both sue, like Officer Serino and Detective Serino, and then was it Singleton that no longer works in the department? Do they have grounds, Dwayne?
My feeling about that from watching their testimony, I was very proud as an investigator because they got up there and they told the truth. It goes back to the old Joe Frotti thing that we teach, the truth and only the truth. And when you get up there on the stand and you know that you don't have a case, but you have to go up there because you're called, you're subpoenaed, that's your job, you have to go tell. You tell the straight truth. While these guys can sue and everything else, they're going to be assets to other departments, and they scored a lot of ethics with a lot of investigators to not make up anything or do anything else. I'm here. You ask me the questions. I tell you the truth. Defense asks me questions. I tell them the truth and let the chips fall where they may. I agree with Cheryl. They're opening themselves up for a lot of lawsuits, especially the chief of police. But that's one of the issues that you have with the chief of police that's different from a constitutionally elected sheriff. You serve at the honor and the ability of the city manager and with most chiefs of police. And when the mayor says, hey, we're going to get rid of you, Mr. City Manager, if you don't get rid of Mr. Chief of Police, that causes a lot of issues. For example, the average length of a chief of police in the state of Georgia is less than 4 years. So that just kind of tells you when times change, they change their chief of police. And that's just the game when you get into it. You know that this could possibly happen to you. And sometimes I feel sorry for those investigators because you know that case just tore them apart and they said, I don't want to be part of that anymore. So the city of Sanford lost investigators, and they're not easy to find.
They were good, ethical investigators.
Amen. And I love Dwayne's point. They're going to be such an asset to other departments, but it's sad for Sanford.
I need to be replaced as co-host by Dwayne.
No.
We'll have an unofficial co-host.
Just like Cheryl says, if you've never delivered a death notification before, and these detectives were the ones that had to go do it, it's never easy to show up at somebody's door at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever time that they showed up after they got that they cleared the scene to tell a mother and a father that their child is gone. There's no easy way to do it.
It's
a very difficult thing. I've had to do it. I'm probably sure Cheryl's probably had to do it before. Also, it's difficult. And then when you see all the facts of the case and you go, I just told them that their child is now deceased and we don't have a case. And they know, you know that in the back of your mind. Those detectives knew in the back of their mind what they saw there and what they had. They probably knew pretty quickly that it's going to be far-fetched at best. And there's nothing that you can do. It's the law. Right. It's the oath that you take.
Tricia, am I still on the air?
Yes, you are, ma'am.
Oh, okay. It's Zuri from Delaware. I am a homicide survivor. My 20-year-old brother was murdered in 1982. He was a rising junior at Duke. In an attempted robbery. I was working in the ER when they brought him in as a John Doe. I just wanted to say how much I respect what police officers do. They found my brother's murderer in 3 weeks, and there was somebody else who was present, and under Pennsylvania law, they both were convicted of first-degree murder, and one died in Greater Food Prison outside of Philadelphia. The other one is still alive, who was not the trigger person. And we sued civilly in federal court in Philadelphia against someone who knew that this was going to go down because my brother was an assistant manager during the summer of a Denny's. And at that time, back in 1982, they would leave with the night's receipts. And the manager, who was a drug dealer, knew this was going to go down and had trained my brother. So my parents sued him and won $1.2 million from his, believe it or not, homeowner's insurance or something to that effect. And with that, my parents established scholarships, one at Duke, one at the Hill School, and one for the detective's children who saw my brother's murder. So I feel so badly for these officers that have been affected by this, because I know how hard they work, how hard you all work, and I know, you know, I've worked in the ER for years, and it just, I think you're such an important part of our society, because somebody has to maintain peace and search for justice for families like us, and for Trayvon Martin, whatever, and for George Zimmerman. It's just so important. And I just wish politics would just stay out of this.
Absolutely, amen.
Just let everybody do their job. And so thank you very much. You all are wonderful representatives.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for the call. That was wonderful.
Yeah, and I hope that you call in again. And thank you for sharing that. It's very important for us as listeners to hear that from you. Go ahead, Cheryl. What were you going to say?
I was just going to think, I mean, that means a lot to Dwayne and I. I don't want to just speak for him, but I know it does. And I got to tell you, I have two sisters that are trauma nurses. And, you know, cops and nurses, our worlds blend an awful lot. So it means a lot coming from you. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I'm just so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I just think that the manager knew about it.
Oh, yeah.
There's a special place in hell.
You say that name to my mother. You know what? People don't realize that the ramifications of their actions sometimes. And my mother has never been the same.
Of course not.
My family.
You're affected. No.
It just was destructive. My mother slept with my brother's bloody clothes under her bed after the police released him for 10 years.
It's every day that I just kind of, I've talked to Cheryl off and on, and I've told her this before. I said, you know, I hope and I pray that one day that we walk in and there's no more need for law enforcement, we're on unemployment, and then we have to go get another job. But I don't think that will ever happen. But,
no,
you know, thank you for such kind thoughts. It's extremely tough for the family because, you know, death notification, there's nothing that we can do. I mean, we don't know the family. We don't, you know, you feel so helpless. And the parts that you don't see is the officers breaking down in the cars afterwards, because we usually go someplace and break down or talk to fellow officers because they know what we had to do, and it's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
A feeling of relief when you reach the truth and can bring closure to a family like this caller and everyone involved. Trish, we got to go back to school.
We do. I've got to be a cop. Except I would be a terrible cop. I'd be crying, and you know, all emotional, and I get mad at guys if they're being mean, and you know, I would be a terrible cop.
I want to be a prosecutor.
Yeah, you know, I've got to tell you something, and please hold on the line, caller. And you gave us your first name, and I apologize, I didn't hear it. What was your first name?
Zuri.
Sherry.
From Delaware.
Sherry. Okay.
Zuri.
Sherry.
Z-U-R-I.
Oh, Zuri. Okay, Zuri, hold on just a moment, please, because we will want to come back to you. I just want to throw something out here that Michael said, and I think this is very interesting. Alan Dershowitz has said many a time, he is a famous defense attorney. He defends people that a lot of us don't like, very famous. He said when young people come up to him and say, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be a defense lawyer, I want to make a difference, he tells them, if you want to make a difference, if you want to make sure the right thing is done, become a prosecutor. He said that's where it's needed, and I think that is so true.
Yeah.
But, Zuri, your story tonight, I can tell you, has affected everybody listening, and it will affect people forever because this show goes up and it's downloaded by the thousands. And so you know, my dear, that you have touched many people all over the world tonight, and please pass along our thoughts and prayers to your family, and you're always welcome to
call in,
okay? Okay, thank you so much.
It's really been an honor. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Wow. You know, I hear people like that, and I think, how can they go on?
I don't know how they do it.
And Cheryl and Dwayne, you probably see this all the time, that people reach in and they find the strength to go on after such a horrible event. And
they remain so affected and changed. You know, I lost my wife to cancer, my companion of 28 years, and I am so forever changed, and that was to cancer. I can't imagine having violence added to that loss. I can't even begin to say I understand what that would feel like.
I can't either. Dwayne, being in law enforcement and being in a city like Atlanta, you definitely don't have a boring night or day at all, I would assume. Does it maybe reassure you at times? I'm sure you see the absolute depths of despair in society and the worst possible people. But people like Zuri, you probably come across people like that that give you hope that, you know, society is going to survive and be okay. Or am I just speaking like a lunatic now?
No, you'd be amazed at the amount of human resolve that you see. And that's one of the things that people don't often see is when you get into a murder investigation, they don't realize that a lot of times the detectives and everybody's working on the case puts their life on hold. It's not uncommon to see, you see the show 48 Hours. Those guys don't get any sleep. You don't get any sleep when you're doing it. You're working this case every minute, following every lead to get justice. And it becomes driven for people to do it. Now, I am semi-retired now, so I haven't been back in that part of the game for a while. But when I was in it, it makes you upset and mad. And when you get to see the people, then you're going to fight for the justice.
Mm-hmm.
There's a killer out there on the street, and it's us to get him.
And in Atlanta, and again, we're getting off topic here, but I find very fascinating, and I hope our listeners do as well. In Atlanta, do you find that most murders are drug-related, basically, drug-related, gang-related, or am I not even close?
Murder can be for so many different reasons. It's a unique crime. It could be a crime of passion. It could be a crime of anger. It could be a crime of monetary or economics. And I've seen it from all walks of life. I mean, from doctors and lawyers to drug dealers to other people. I mean, every area you get this with the crime. And when you don't look at the person, the way that I always looked at the investigation is, that's somebody's child that I need to give them an answer for why. And the saddest thing is, in the few that I've worked, sometimes you don't get the answer of why.
That must be horribly frustrating. Cheryl, what were you going to say?
No, I was just agreeing with him that I was given some advice by a veteran homicide detective early in my career, and he said, you know what? Sometimes we never know what really happened. And he said, and the hardest thing you'll ever do is when you know exactly what happened. And he was right.
Really? Why
sometimes
is that?
When you know
Explain why that's so hard.
Sometimes if you think we don't know what happened to this person, let's say they're missing and never recovered, you don't know. But sometimes you know exactly the torture the person went through, like with the Jeffrey Dahmer case. You know they were forced to drink bleach. You know they were sexually assaulted. You know they were stabbed multiple times. So those are the type of things that are also hard to live with, because those are demons you can name. And, in so many of the cases that, you know, Dwayne and I have talked about many a night, is those are the ones that kind of keep you up, too.
Really?
And, you know, I don't know if you can see it, Tricia, but if you have a number that ends in 9591, Sherry Jefferson was trying to call in, too.
Oh, okay, let's see. Yeah, she's right here. Oh, here she is.
I mean, when you have the drug dealer versus drug dealer, and you have to go tell the parents that their son, who they kind of know probably is not doing the right thing, and that they died over a street corner that produced money of a drug, and that's the reason why they lost their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just tears it because it's just a total waste of humanity.
Oh.
And there's no way to explain it because they know that their son was a drug dealer and that they were playing in a game. And that game was going to end up costing them their life, and they were hoping that they could just outlive them. And then when you get to that as an investigator, you're just completely torn apart. How do you explain it?
How do you? You can't. And it makes
and what
it,
about
it,
this notion of closure? It drives me insane. Is there have you ever really seen such a thing as true closure?
There's no such thing.
I don't believe there is either.
We do have Sherry. I'm sure it's Ms. Jackson. Are you there with us?
Hi, it's attorney Sherry Jefferson. How are you?
Jefferson, I'm sorry. I apologize. You know, here's the thing. I really shouldn't be behind the microphone. I should be behind no machinery whatsoever. So please forgive me. Sherry Jefferson. And you are, I believe, the director of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. And a little bit of background. A few weeks ago, we had Cheryl and Ms. Jefferson's students on, and most of her students, if not all, are African American, and they were asked to pick which side they wanted to be on, the side of George Zimmerman, the defense, or the side of the prosecution, and which one did they feel strongly about. So they picked, and then they made them switch sides and argue the other side, which was brilliant. And they came on the show and did it, and it was really interesting. Ms. Jefferson, I would just like to give you the floor and talk about your thoughts and feelings and perhaps maybe what your students are saying. It's all yours.
Thank you for having me. And just for some clarity, Cheryl McCollum is the director of the Cold Case Institute. I am the founder of the Family Law Center and an attorney. And I also serve as a faculty at the college where Cheryl and I have engaged in the mock trial for George Zimmerman. So the credit for the Cold Case Institute goes to Cheryl.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. Like I said, I should not be operating heavy machinery.
I know how it feels to multitask. I just wanted to make that distinction.
I'm glad you did.
I first wanted to start out, if I could, by complimenting Dwayne Thomas, because when you asked him about whether the murders are more prevalent among drug dealers or not, which seems to be the thought process around this country, he gave you an accurate response, and I commend him on that, because so often we leave these type of programs with the belief that murders around this country are predicated upon drug dealers or the most violent offenses, and murders happen, unfortunately, in every sector, among every group, among every social economic background. So I just really wanted to say, you know, I just commend him on having such an honest, forthright response to that. Having said that, there was a comment made in regard to what is going to or may or possibly could transpire with the Stanford police, and I just sort of want to address some things in the order in which I've heard them. I do want you all in the listening audience to have an understanding of the fact that those officers may never be able to have the opportunity to commence with litigation for wrongful termination or demotion, primarily because of a ruling that Judge Nelson made. When a defense counsel moves for a directed verdict and they are denied, it has an adverse effect straight across, meaning that even George Zimmerman may not be able to proceed under federal law now, because a directed verdict that is ruled against you when he files a motion for directed verdict, when the prosecutors rest their case, and you attempt to explain to the judge that the prosecutors have failed to meet their burden beyond a reasonable doubt as to the offenses of second-degree murder and manslaughter, when she ruled against them on both cases and did not grant an acquittal, federal law clearly states now, and it's supported by case law, that you cannot move for malicious prosecution at that point. Why? Because once the judge denies a motion for directed verdict, it establishes that regardless of what the jury says, that judge, as a matter of law, deemed that there was enough probable cause to have him arrested and to pursue with the conviction. So now, regardless of the jury's verdict in this case, the law is going to prohibit him from moving with malicious prosecution as a civil lawsuit, and any of the officers that were adversely affected, it would be very, very, very difficult for them to commence with civil action against the police department or the city based on the outcome of this particular case. So
now, can you speculate that was her motive in making those rulings?
I tell you both personally and professionally, and I've shared this with Cheryl and my students, I have been a victim of crime, but I've also served as a criminal defense attorney. And I've been in a similar situation where you have a motion for directed verdict ruled adversely, you think about those things. I do want to call Judge Nelson out to make any speculations as to what her thought process may or may not have been. But I have had this conversation with Professor McCollum in my concern, if you will, and I use that word respectfully as an officer of the court, with my concerns with what I followed very briefly concerning the case. I'm concerned about the matter in which the prosecutors presented the case. I have questions, and I'm sure a lot of people do, both who are attorneys and laypersons, as to whether or not this case was properly prosecuted. If a defense attorney had defended this case the way the prosecutors prosecuted, those defense attorneys would very well be losing their licenses possibly first day Monday morning. It would be so egregious, and it would be a clear case of ineffective assistance of counsel. The Sixth Amendment right of Mr. Zimmerman would have been adversely affected. I say that from a defense attorney's perspective. There were so many things about this case that are called into question. The order of the witnesses that they called, the matter in which these witnesses were prepared. A prosecutor could never coach a witness. You can never coach a witness, but you must always prepare your witnesses. Why was their witness reading notes? That's going to be a big question that people want to ask, particularly since it was a medical examiner. Why wasn't the girlfriend of Trayvon Martin properly prepared for the type of questions and or submission of examination that she was to be subject to in terms of mannerism, her courtroom decorum? Those are the things that you can prepare a witness for. Respecting the judge, presentment before jury, how to conduct yourself in a courtroom, how to properly and respectfully respond to defense counsel. So those are the technical, procedural issues that one would bring up. The other thing, the substantive issues. Why were certain witnesses called by the prosecutor when those should have been defense witnesses? Did it open the door to evidence that would not have otherwise been able to come in? So, again, we look at these from constitutional perspective and from the matter in which a case ought to be prosecuted. Could that have been a factor in whether or not the ruling would have been different? I respectfully state that from day one, and McCollum could share this with you, we pretty much knew, even before the mock trial, that there was going to be a not guilty verdict concerning second-degree murder. But was there enough evidence to go forward with regard to manslaughter? I say that there may have been, and when you look at the questions that the jury asked at 6 o'clock on this evening to the judge concerning the issues of manslaughter, and when you look at the delay in her response and the actions that she took in getting that response, which was calling the prosecutor and the defense attorneys back to court, then giving them an opportunity to present questions to the jury, then telling the jury that they must in turn ask a specific question. One may ask on appeal, if the state chose to appeal that issue, whether the judge improperly instructed the jury with her charges. If so, would that have made a difference in regard to them attaining a guilty verdict on the issue of manslaughter? In other words, were the elements of manslaughter properly conveyed to the jury? That is going to be a big question. And when the jury said at 6 o'clock this evening that they needed clarity, the question will beg, why did the judge ask them in turn to ask a specific question as opposed to answering the question that this lay group of people presented to her? After all, they're not attorneys, so they may not know the quote-unquote specific question that they were supposed to ask other than, we need clarity concerning the elements of manslaughter. The prosecutor could very well use that to go back and ask for an appeal and raise the issue that the judge improperly instructed the jury as to manslaughter.
I want to ask a quick question, if I may.
Yes.
I'm sorry. But so are you saying that the state can actually appeal a verdict and have it overturned and retry the case?
What about
double jeopardy?
Double jeopardy would not attach where there is an error. Any time you make an error concerning a procedural or substantive issue and it's an error of law that creates a harm, the prosecutor or the defense could say that this is a jury verdict that but for proper instructions to the jury would have resolved in an acquittal or a guilty verdict, then either side is permissible to go back before to the Court of Appeals and ask for them to examine the record, that is the court transcript, look at the jury charges, look at the questions that the jury then asks, even once deliberation concludes. Anytime the jury have questions, those go back on the record, if you will, meaning the court reporter is to document that, make it part of the official record. You generally do not have prosecutors appealing the jury verdict, but jury verdicts can be appealed where there is an error by a judge pertaining to jury instruction.
And do you feel that that error is strong enough in this case that the prosecution might have the absolute gall to try something like this?
Again, I don't ever wish to speak for opposing side respectfully as you all would do in your capacity as law enforcement. If I were defense counsel, obviously I'm going to be satisfied with the particular verdict. But if I am the district attorney for Seminole County, I would be greatly concerned about the instruction that Judge Nelson gave and did not give as it pertains to the question that was asked at 6 o'clock. The question that I would be concerned with is whether or not the jury properly understood the elements of manslaughter. And if they did not, by law, their decision could be reversed.
Wow.
If they made a ruling, if they deliberated based on improper instruction or failure of a judge to properly instruct, then yes, that particular verdict could be overturned.
And let me ask you, I need some clarification on this, because now I didn't think I could be shocked anymore in this case, and I truly am. Okay, so the judge says you have to be more specific in your question, and let's face it, the jury doesn't know what to ask. That's why they're asking
Correct.
For clarification. Why
Correct.
Couldn't she be more specific? Why couldn't she just
and
say, okay, here's...
And that is the question. I apologize.
Okay. No, please go ahead, please.
No, you please. I'm sorry.
No, I'm done. I want to hear what you have to say. I'm on the edge of my seat here. Why couldn't she just tell them?
This evening, there are so many defense attorneys across the country. And mind you, it's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic because these are defense attorneys who are saying this is going to be a problem. Because as you just articulated for your audience, these are lay people. Jurors are members of the general public, most of whom are not members of either law enforcement or the legal profession. So when you say to them, ask a specific question, and they're asking you for an element, they do not know the specific question to ask, and that's why they are yielding and relying on you for guidance. And when you fail to give that guidance, it will be up to a court of appeals to determine if that is what we call harmful error, meaning there are numerous errors that can transpire in a trial, but not all of those errors are harmful. Harmful meaning that but for her giving a proper instruction or being more definitive in her response, would the jury, and the question that the Court of Appeals will ask, would it have been more probable than not that the jury would have reached a charge on the lesser included offense of manslaughter? And it is already being speculated that they may have.
Oh, my gosh, I officially love you.
I do. Yes, I do, too.
Love listening to you. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for calling. This is just absolutely amazing. I have got to hope in my layperson mind, because I'm trying to think with common sense here, that they would not dare prolong this travesty that was a trial and try and bring that up. Do you, blah, blah, blah.
Without any more evidence, yes.
With the utmost respect, keep in mind the role that the prosecutor's playing here. The prosecutor's not George Zimmerman's defense team. So the prosecutor
right.
plays to win. And 99% of any case that a prosecutor brings, it's usually because that prosecutor knows they can get a conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep in mind who we're dealing with here. Prosecutors, 99.9% of the time, are only going to bring a case when they know they can win. And that's why when you have a defense who wins an acquittal, even people like myself, we walk away so elated because that's a case that we know the prosecutors knew they bet their life and their life, we say their life and their license on, because
uh-huh.
they're so assured that they're going to win. So in a case like this, that would be something the prosecutors look at. And here I'll say this. Every single attorney, and Professor McCollum's know because I shared this with the students, any effective lawyer, be it defense or prosecutor, you go in preparing to lose so that you can prepare to win. And what we mean by that is this. You prepare to win your case, but you're always prepared if you lose. So in this particular case, they're already looking at appellate issues. You have to be. You have to be looking for where was their error. Was there an objection that was overruled that should have been sustained? Was there an objection that was sustained that should have been overruled? Was there testimony that was admitted or evidence that was admitted that should have been inadmissible? Did the judge allow someone to testify on a matter that they should not have been able to testify? Was there jury misconduct? You examine all of that from voir dire, the jury selection, to the very end to make sure even the very question of an all-white female jury could very well become a constitutional issue that could be raised.
I don't even know how to respond. I feel like my mouth has gone dry and my brain has dried up even more. Cheryl McCollum, help.
Well, all I can say is I am one of the luckiest people because I get to work with Dr. Jefferson and Dwayne Thompson every day.
Dr. Jefferson
is amazing.
People
don't believe me. But a lot of times I tell people, you know, I'm the dumbest person in the room, and that's how I like it. Because I get notions of folks like this all
the time. I speak for myself. I learned so much from her.
It's just
a pleasure interacting with her. And we bring two different spectrums to the table. She has a very strong prosecutorial legal background. Mine is defense. And together we're just an awesome team.
I mean, the three of you tonight, I love it.
And Dwayne, if they have time, to both talk about the judge not allowing a delay in reading of the verdict to let law enforcement get in place.
Yes,
if
let's
I
talk
may
about
just
that.
Quickly jump in there. When Dr. McCollum called me this evening to let me know about the verdict, she's how I learned about it. Mm-hmm. I had no idea about the verdict. I had been oblivious to it. I'd been under the weather. And so when I got the call from her, I was shocked. I was shocked for two reasons, and I shared this with her. I was shocked because we already know the climate that this particular case has and may and will continue to create. We already know that there's a possibility that there are so many people who may not understand that this particular jury does not speak. They do not speak for all of America. So just because you have an all-white jury who says he's not guilty, they're not necessarily stating that the acts of George Zimmerman were acceptable. What they're saying was that the evidence that was presented was not enough to sustain a verdict of guilty. And that is a big difference. And when people misinterpret such a verdict, they intend think, oh, my God, you can go out there and shoot and kill any black person you want. No, that is not what was being articulated by that verdict. That verdict speaks solely to the presentment of the evidence or lack thereof. And I wish that she had waited till Monday. That would have created a climate where people could articulate and share with members in their church, their schools, their community, the importance and significance and understanding of how to interpret a jury verdict, than to wait till a Saturday evening at 10 o'clock hour in the summer when people have nothing else better to do but drink, party, and engage in violence if they so choose, and operate in excuses, denial, and justification, and otherwise engage in violence based on ignorance. And what I mean by ignorance is not really understanding what the jury verdict means and misinterpreting it to their advantage. And for her to just allow people to run loose like that, it's just so amazing to me that she did that. I was so blown away. I was speechless when Cheryl said, Sherry, the verdict is not guilty. I said, on all counts? She said, yes. I said, well, when did it come out? I'm thinking it was like yesterday. She know I'm sick. She called me late today to let me know. She's like, no, it just came out. I was floored. I thought it was, all due respect to Judge Nelson, I thought it was irresponsible. And yes, I'm
absolutely
saying that as an attorney.
Amen.
I thought it was irresponsible to wait to 10 o'clock in the evening on a Saturday to allow a verdict like that to be released. I've got nieces and nephews who are good, outstanding citizens, who are college students, good kids, who might get caught out there in the crossfire from people who are angry, who are bitter, and who don't otherwise know what's going on. We got people out there who are out entertaining with their family and their friends who might get caught in crossfires, or someone who might just be rude and disrespectful and otherwise belligerent and engage in warfare with them. And these people might be innocent and just don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I just thought it was irresponsible.
Completely.
I think Sherry brings up a great point that people often misunderstand about trials and trial juries. The law in itself is very complicated. That's the reason why we had Gideon versus Running Right for illegal to have counsel for defense. It is very complicated, and it's very difficult to understand. So these jurors were sitting there listening to this with all the turmoil. They know what the impact of what their ruling is going to be. They know that the world, the United States, is sitting on waiting on bated breath every day. The news cameras are camped out. They're not blind. They know what's going on. And to have judges deliver, you know, debates about how they're going to deliver their instructions to the jury and how they're going to deliver it for a lay person to understand what are all of our options. I mean, there's been countless number of times that we do it. We had a sensational juvenile case of rape and sexual assault here where the jury actually stated that if they'd known that they could have applied a lesser charge, they would have, but they weren't instructed to do it and they didn't understand it. And also, when we look at death penalty cases, I know that the judges are trained in death penalty cases with constitutional charges that they give to the jury on everything that they do. So it's very important because the judge is a very high figure in the courtroom, and the jury has to take what the judge says as their instructions, and they have no idea how to ask the right question. Because they don't even know the question. They just go, this is what the judge has charged us with.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not allowed to have legal resources in there. They're not allowed to have law books or search Google or use the iPads or anything else. It's just what they've been given. It's very difficult.
Sherry, may I ask a question, please?
Please do.
Yes.
Now, the jury instructions, aren't those established on a federal level or a state level? Aren't they pretty much the same for all jury directives? And therefore, by saying, please be specific in your question, isn't that just essentially saying go back to the accepted, mandate? Or, you know what I'm trying to ask.
Yes, I do. I just want to give you an opportunity to complete your question.
I can't.
And I didn't want to
you blow me away. I feel like a babbling idiot next to you. So.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. What is unique about jury questions is that both a prosecutor and a defense attorney comes up with their own. So jury questions is a very interesting term because the jury instructions are not quite instructions per se. What they are is a list, and I'll give you an example. You list issues that come up in a case, credibility of a witness, the impeachment, the innocence, whether a defendant can or cannot or should or should not take the witness stand. So if I'm a defense attorney, I would say as follows. One of my jury instructions would be for the judge to advise the jury that because my client did not take the witness stand, they cannot deem him guilty because he did not testify. So the jury instruction works in that matter. In many instances, your jury instruction might literally be the recitement of an actual case that has gone before a Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals. It might be the recitement of a statute that says the elements of second-degree murder in the state of Florida pursuant to code section such and such and such. So that jury must hear the exact elements of second-degree murder. They must be instructed as to the exact elements of manslaughter. That's how you instruct. So respectfully, they're neither federal nor state. They're applicable to each individual case and the elements of each individual case, everything from the number of witnesses you call to the type of jury you pull to the whether that witness is credible, whether they're not credible, whether there's a possibility that an individual was impeached, how to determine the admissibility of evidence, the hearsay rule. You can give 100 instructions if you so choose. In your particular case, if you're a defense attorney, you can give the judge 100 instructions. Those jury charges is what we call them, are also then provided to the opposing side, and they review them, and you review theirs. And then sometimes together both parties will say, well, we have enough, and they're equivalent. Here's the dilemma. If I submit 40 and the judge only instructs on 20, then I now might have a legitimate objection to raise to say, well, the judge failed to properly instruct on 20 out of the 40 that was submitted, and the 20 that she failed to instruct upon may have been the difference between an acquittal and a conviction.
But in this case, obviously the prosecution would have to claim that they didn't agree with the jury charges, correct?
in this particular case, the prosecutor would have to state that when the question was asked at 6 o'clock, that the judge failed to properly respond, that the judge failed to properly instruct.
But even though she asked if the prosecution and defense agreed on the response?
Well, you have to keep in mind that a judge respectfully is always the final arbitrator. So that even if you ask me a question as a judge and I give you my response, you may not agree with my response. You may in turn decide to deliver or convey your own response. So the question that one is waiting to find out is whether that 6 o'clock response was what the defense and the prosecutors actually conveyed to the judge, or whether Judge Nelson simply said to them, you have to ask us a specific question.
Oh, well, I was watching, and she gave them a half hour to confer, and they
yes.
both came in, and she asked them if they agreed, and they both said yes. So that would help in an appellate process should the state decide to appeal to the actual reading.
So did the state say that they agreed? Did the state say that they agreed with her question of ask a specific question?
Yeah, yeah. The defense and the prosecution came up with that and agreed that it was both of their final responses to the question.
Right, but Michael, what she's asking is, did they agree about having to ask them a question regarding their question?
Right,
in other words,
yes,
O'Mara
yes, that's
said,
what
I'm
are saying.
You going to bring them in? Can we, you know, hear their question out loud in person? And she said no. And so then that's when they constructed the question based on what she limited them to ask back. Because what she was trying to infer was that the jury's not supposed to talk to anybody about it, and she didn't want them coming back to court, that if they had a very specific question, they needed to address that and that only. So that's
to kind of
the
prevent them
saying.
From retrying or making extra points back to the jury in front of them,
correct.
In front of both the prosecutors. So they do it. I've had this done to me a couple of times where they've asked specific questions, and the judge makes them write the questions down, and then the
mm-hmm.
judge relays it back to them, and then they are able to provide their answers, and the judge sends it back with the deputy back to the room. So essentially once the trial is over and both sides are rested, the jury's not coming back in.
And if you remember in the O.J. Simpson case, if I stand to be corrected, Judge, I think his name is Aido, or Aido, if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, I probably
Aido.
Botched it up. Aido, I probably botched it up, but I remember the jury asking numerous questions, and he brought them back to answer them. And in most cases, particularly high-profile cases like this, when you're being watched under a microscope, you want to make sure that you're as articulate, as instructive, informative, as edifying as you need to be for the improvement of the jury, for the manifestation of justice, because ultimately, in the end, that should be what you as the judge want. So, again, I only speak based on my limited knowledge as it pertains to the fact that I did not see that video footage. I only read that at 6 o'clock the jury did come back, the jury did inquire. She simply sent the question back. If that, as it's being conveyed nationally, is accurate, then that in and of itself could very well prove to be problematic. If she tied the prosecutor's hand and said, no, I'm not going to allow them to come back out. I'm not going to allow you to get any additional information for what they need. Just basically answered this question, and they felt like, well, we can only ask based on what you conveyed. And then they come back and say, well, you know, our interpretation was very limited to the judge's interpretation, and the judge's interpretation was very limited in the scope. You're going to have a problem. This is what everyone also needs to take into consideration, and some of it really isn't about law. It's about common sense. The fact that the jury asked about manslaughter at the 6 o'clock hour, this being their second day of deliberation, it speaks to whether or not they really thought there was a manslaughter issue here. Think about
mm-hmm.
it. And the fact that the judge gave such a blatant answer, they may have very well just said, you know what, I'll just forget it then. We don't know what specific question to ask, and if they don't care, we don't care either. Not guilty.
I see. I see.
I'm just sitting here just drinking.
That's what I was trying to say last night. If
right.
you turn that jury off, they will not forgive you. I'm telling you. I've seen it 1,000 times.
But don't you think, I mean, this isn't the same thing, obviously, but the knock-knock joke, I would have thought that would have turned the jury off, too.
You know what? 23 days ago, they're not thinking about that.
Well, that's true.
They just
very
kind
good
of
point.
Talked it up to him. And I'm telling you, that was almost evil genius. I'm telling you, because they forgot about Mr. Guy immediately.
They did. And that one, that he did
and
a good job in the opening
really
statement.
What's really interesting is how difficult it generally is to attain a not guilty in a particular case like this, like this, where the defendant doesn't take the stand.
Well, good. Yeah, because usually self-defense, they usually take the stand because they want to tell their story. They have to be believable.
Exactly.
It's one of the few times.
And that speaks to, and I say this with the utmost respect, think about that. Your audience sleep on that, and then you think about how much of a job or lack thereof the prosecutors did. When you can have a claim of self-defense, and the defendant doesn't even have to prove he engaged in self-defense, and he's acquitted on everything, including the lesser included, and he never had to take the witness stand, and there was no other witnesses, ideally, to what transpired. They had a whole bunch of people speak, but no one really needed to listen because that case really dealt with four elements. The 911 call, Trayvon Martin's girlfriend's communications with him, which were very limited in scope, and what Mr. Zimmerman would or would not have done, because no one actually saw the initial altercation to determine if it was one of self-defense. No one. So that really allows us to really say, what did the prosecutors do or fail to do to convince this jury that this was a case of self-defense?
Very good point. I want to ask Dr. Jefferson something because, believe it or not, we are running out of time. I have a three-hour show, and I could go on for another 3 hours. Actually, we have quite a bit of time left, but I want to make sure we get this out there. First of all, I want to explain who we have on the show. We have Dr. Jefferson. And Dr. Jefferson, I apologize. Could you please tell us what it is that you do? I gave you the title of Director of Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, and that was totally wrong. What is your position?
First, I forgive you. That's not a bad title to have, by the way. this is Sherry Jefferson. I am an attorney as well as the founder of the Family Law Center, and I am a faculty member at Barter College.
And an amazing person. We love having you on our show. We also have Cheryl McCollum, the professor at the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, and the director. She founded it. Is that correct, Cheryl?
That's correct.
Okay. We have Duane from Atlanta who is studying. Are you getting your doctorate in criminology, Duane? Is that what you told us?
Criminal justice.
Criminal justice.
Law enforcement for 23 years.
And
I'm
Michael
also
in Minnesota.
A professor and
another truly amazing person. And Michael in Minnesota who's here to help me when I stumble like I am now. Okay. Dr. Jefferson, question for you. What do you see, and just as first thing that comes to your mind, what do you see, if any, ramifications of this case that will happen in the prosecutor's office or maybe the governor's office? Will there be any repercussions from this? Will things be done differently now?
Two things, I think. Keep in mind the 45 delay in the prosecution or the arrest, if you will, of Mr. Zimmerman was not just a decision of the police department, was also a decision of the prosecutors. So the question will beg is whether there was a rush to judgment. Second, whether they were not properly prepared for the prosecution of this case. Third, whether they yielded to public outcry and how they will respond to that in the future. Fourth, whether or not there should be some form of addendum to the, or amendment, if you will, to the Stand Your Ground law in the state of Florida, how that's going to play out so as not to send a message that you can engage in vigilantism and then hide behind the law, if you will. So that might be something on the governor's table as to whether or not they may need to amend the particular law to maybe add certain provisions that would otherwise protect the citizens of the state of Florida that most other states will probably piggyback upon as well so that we don't have a nightmare. In terms of the prosecutors, I respectfully, honestly believe that there may very well be some bar complaints that may be filed as to whether or not they have effectively, whether or not they effectively prosecuted this case.
Wow.
I agree completely.
So what, when you say there might be some things filed with the bar, who would file them? Who has the ability to file complaints against the prosecutors with the Bar Association?
Prosecutors have such a broad discretion, but where some of their acts are deemed so egregious, the bar complaints, particularly since this case has been televised on an international circuit, so many people saw what had been transpiring, that the bar, it could happen, a judge could file a bar complaint against an attorney, the lead prosecutor in the case could say that his lawyers did not do what they needed to do, Trayvon Martin's family could file bar complaints and question whether or not these particular prosecutors effectively prepared, whether they engaged with due diligence. As attorneys, we have about 50 canons that we have to follow in terms of preparation, due diligence, knowledge of the case, etc. So there may be questions as to whether or not these particular prosecutors played a game. And I say this again respectfully because even though I don't work with them personally, they are still colleagues in terms of my profession. So I want to be careful as not to say anything that would otherwise deem anything that they did to be improper. But in regard to attempting to answer you, if by chance someone suggests that the 45-day delay was a decision that was made in that office, and that they really had no intent to seek a prosecution, let alone a conviction, and that they threw this case, then yes, that could become a question for the Martin family to raise with the bar as to whether or not this case was properly prosecuted. Did they have evidence that they failed to use? Were they introducing evidence that they should not have? Did they call witnesses that would enable them to open the door to testimony that would not have otherwise been open? Why would they have called certain people that eventually helped the defense more than it helped the prosecutor's case? Prosecutors work very closely with members of law enforcement. They're their backbones. They help them with their cases. Was this their way of saying, we didn't want to prosecute this, but we had to, but we threw you a bone and we got it back?
Interesting.
Interesting.
Very interesting. I am just
said
like
that at the same time. That's great.
Well, see, we think alike. That's why I have you on the show. You can say the things that I'm thinking, and then if it's wrong, they'll blame you and not me. But anyway, that's a whole other story. Okay, Cheryl, what do you think about what Dr. Jefferson just said? Dr. Jefferson, I could have you on the show every single night and just let you talk. I mean,
I
really.
Don't know. I wish she read bedtime stories. I'd listen
I know.
To her forever.
I know. We could.
She's phenomenal.
But, Cheryl,
no,
what
I
do
mean,
you think?
You know, again, it's hard to listen to her and disagree with her, but I've said on your show many a night, if somebody's not disbarred over this, I'll be shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And if not this, I don't know when.
Yeah, well, that's true. This is about as good as you can get, you know, if they're not disbarred over this.
I've called it lacrosse-esque and ish on your show more than once. Again, it's hard to listen to Dr. Jefferson and disagree with her at all. I mean, you've had her on the show where she plays the prosecutor and then the defense attorney.
I go back
and
forth.
And when she gets done, you cannot vote because you agree with both sides
both
and
sides.
She plays both sides.
Dr. Jefferson, when you were on, I was agreeing when you were talking about the defense, and then I turned around and agreed when you said the prosecution. And I've said this before, I'm like a fish out of water. I'm just going flip, 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 flip. Like, you know, I'm just jumping back and forth like a tennis match. Dwayne, what do you think about what Dr. Jefferson said?
Oh, she is right on point with every one of her statements. I think the bigger thing that we have to look at is that what's societal impact, and this is really, like I said in my opening statement, this is where a rush to prosecution by a mob mentality of people caused an incarriage of justice and did not let it go through its full machinations. And I think I think if we don't learn anything from this, it's slow down and get the truth.
There you go.
And get the facts. And let's present the case the way that it has to be tried by law and not tried in the media or public opinion. But I think she's exactly right. I think, you know, if I was a prosecutor, I might be a little bit worried that the bar might be calling me to come down and answer a few questions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. People, you know what? I apologize. We do have to wrap it up here in just a little bit. I want to go around the table, though, and get some final thoughts.
Aren't there any questions in the chat?
Well, there might.
Do you have any telephone calls?
I do have some telephone calls, but I'm afraid to answer them.
No, don't be.
Okay. This is on Michael now, people. If somebody is, you know, doing whatever it is they do when they call me and they shouldn't be doing, here we go. How about area code 703? Area code 703, you're on the air with Dr. Jefferson and Michael in Minnesota, Cheryl and Dwayne. What is your question or comment? Area code 703.
Hello. I'd just like to call and comment about the show. We had one earlier going that got shut down because people were calling in and disrespecting Trayvon, and I don't think that's really right.
I agree.
And, I mean, I grew up in West Philadelphia,
uh-huh.
And, I mean, most of the time I was just outside, you know, on the basketball court playing basketball, and stuff similar to that happened with friends and people that were just up to no good that were in my neighborhood. And I used to get, you know, into little fights, and sometimes my mom would get scared, and she finally sent me away to go live with my aunt and uncle. And they live in California, they live in Bel Air. And it's just,
okay.
It's hard.
So do you feel like we've disrespected, Trayvon?
Yeah, do you feel like, yes.
No, I feel like
doing the Fred Prince. Hang up on this guy.
Okay, I just did. Why?
Yeah, he's doing the Fresh Prince of Bel Air.
Oh, okay. That's it. I thought that story sounded familiar.
That was hilarious.
And I'm laughing so hard, I can't believe it. Okay, Michael, we're going to take another phone call, and this is your fault. Here we go. Area code 267, you're on the air. May I have your question or comment, please?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. Please be nice. Please don't be a prank call.
No, this is 100% serious call.
Okay.
I'm just calling. My comment is that, you know, the whole thing with the evidence and the case, what they really should have done is, they should have just looked at my big fat penis.
Oh, God. Michael, you've got to learn to trust me.
Okay.
You might get to a real one, and wouldn't that be a shame?
Who cares?
A show like this that is used to can educate the listening audience, that you have people that are wasting time. You know, they're listening to the show, but they're going to waste time with comments like that. And that is an essence of what speaks to the mentality of the George Zimmermans out there, the Trayvon Martins who are no longer with us, because this is what people encounter, right? You're trying to be serious, you're trying to edify your listening audience, and then you're going to have someone pull stunts like that. So it makes you second-guess everything, right?
Exactly.
It's a shame, because there could be a legitimate caller.
I know. I just had a feeling, and I'm not going to tell you how I picked up on it, but they do something, and I'm not going to let them know what it is. But I can see it, and it kind of makes me a little suspicious. Anyway,
why people like Trayvon Martin are deceased. I'll tie it in. Because the same exact scenario that you're going through right now of trying to pick and make sure that that right caller is the one, this is how Trayvon Martin ends up deceased. He turned out to be the one who didn't have the gun. He turned out to be the one who was not violent or belligerent, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he ends
right.
up dying. But maybe the two before him, who Zimmerman could have encountered, would have been the ones with the gun. Do you understand where I'm going with this?
No, I'm not.
So can I follow up with that?
Yes.
So you're saying he didn't have a gun, but he had his fist. And the cement, if you want to accept the
defenses. I think you're missing my point. But the point that I'm making is, when she just said, you said you're trying to find the right caller. And you try caller number one, he's a prank. Caller number two is a prank. So you're hoping that caller number three is not a prank. George Zimmerman, when he says these assholes, well, he didn't know Trayvon Martin from the nearest kid next door. He didn't know him from the guy across the street. He just knew that there were people like what he thought Trayvon Martin was going to be. The same way it is with what's happening right now with trying to find the phone call. And it just so happened.
Did you think he profiled him?
Hmm?
Do you think he profiled him?
Profiled? Yeah.
Do I think he was profiled? I think the fact that George Zimmerman was taking an antipsychotic medication, which I don't know why the prosecutors didn't bring it up. It's in the EMT report.
Whoa, wait, he's taking antipsychotic?
I've never heard that either.
If you look at a copy of the EMT report, the EMT documents the two medications he was taking. Temazepam is an antipsychotic, antidepressant.
Wow. I did not know it was antipsychotic.
He has both of them listed on that EMT report. And I said to Cheryl, why didn't that ever come up in the trial?
Now, what were the names of the medications?
Excuse me?
What were the names of the medications?
Temazepam, which is an antidepressant, antipsychotic medication, which also gives you suicidal thoughts as a side effect.
What could the prosecution have done with that?
So if someone asked me if he profiled, I'm going to be honest, I don't as much think this was about race as much as it was about him not wanting another asshole to get away. And that's what he said,
that's it.
And that's exactly what I think it was for him. I think for him,
yes,
it didn't matter if this person would have turned out to be white or Latino or Jew or Gentile. I think he just was angry and disappointed that there were individuals that were coming into his community, and he believed that the police were not doing their job, and he wanted to make sure that that would never happen again. And he chose the person happened to be Trayvon Martin. So whether he profiled him because he was black, I don't know if it was because he was black. If you look at the fact that this guy made about 50 phone calls, I don't want to surmise that it was because he was black or white. February 26, 2012, I was sleeping in my bed. So I don't want to speak as to facts that have not been admitted. And the fact that he never had the opportunity to testify, I would merely be speculating, which is an attorney who calls for objection. So I can only speak for what I know. And what I know is what's in that EMT report. And that guy was taking two meds. And I don't know why those meds were not brought up somehow, some way, or called the doctor who prescribed them, because that could have told us a lot about George Zimmerman.
So do you believe a manslaughter finding would have been more accurate in this case?
I don't know to say that, because he did not have the opportunity to testify. And in order to determine whether manslaughter would have been appropriate based in a real trial, you generally would want to hear something that would allude that the murder was that the killing was negligent. And the fact that he never testified, which was a good defense measure, the fact that he didn't open that door, as again, that's when that lawyer in me comes in, and I don't want to speculate. I wasn't there February 26th. I don't know what he felt.
It makes it sound like the prosecutors did throw the case in, doesn't it?
I don't think
it's really important evidence.
They couldn't have thrown it. I think they just didn't do their. They didn't know what they were doing.
I think that there was evidence that they could have used, like the EMT report, that I think they could have honed in on the fact that he was on those medications. I think they could have honed in on the fact that he said in the EMT report that he did not have any neck or back pain. If your head's being banged on the cement, you're going to have a neck and back pain. I don't think they honed in enough on the fact that those photographs that were taken by Officer Smith differed from the way the EMT said he looked when they reviewed him. I just think there were little things like that that if someone had really placed more of an emphasis on, you may have gotten a different verdict.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Wow.
That
Isn't
is fascinating.
It
that is really good. Kids, friends, doctors, lawyers, and people who work in law enforcement, I do have to wrap it up. I apologize. I'll be honest. Don't hang up yet. I have to get up so early and go to work, and I need my beauty sleep. Trust me, I really need my beauty sleep. But what I want to do now is go around the table and just have some final thoughts. Dwayne, whether you know it or not or like it or not, you're going to become one of our regulars that we will call on many a time for your brilliant analysis. So, Dwayne, law enforcement expert, getting your doctorate, let's hear your final thoughts on what happened today and the verdict, please.
Well, final thoughts is, to the truth of justice, justice played its role in the way that our court system is designed.
in an adversarial role. Both sides had an equal chance. It was played to a jury of his peers. And at the end of the day, a verdict was rendered. So there has to be faith in our law enforcement system now, when in the justice system. But on the other hand, I think as Sherry Jefferson has pointed out, there are a lot of questions that go unanswered. And I just hope that we learn from this politically, that politics and law do not fit together at all when it comes to justice, and that the media portrayal for sensationalization of a crime that, unfortunately, a young man lost his life. And that's what it boils down to. A senseless, unneeded young man who lost his life for whatever reason. And once we get through that, I think society should take a look at it and try to learn from it.
Very good point. And I'm going to go to Dr. Jefferson next. Dr. Jefferson, your final thoughts on the day, please.
My final thoughts is a prayer, really, that the verdict is not interpreted to be the thought process of one group of Americans toward another, and that individuals take the time to understand that this verdict simply means that it is based on what this jury, this sole jury, these six people believe the evidence to be or not to be, that this is not a license to engage in vigilantism, no more than it is a license for anyone to feel the need to seek revenge.
Thank you. Beautifully put. And Michael in Minnesota, your final thoughts, please, my darling friend.
Well, it pretty much piggybacks on what the wonderful and talented and my newest love in my life, Dr. Jefferson.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I really, you know, as everyone knows that's listened to this program, I started this completely open-minded with probably a lean towards the prosecution. But as I listened to all of the evidence as it was presented, I realized there was no evidence to support murder two nor manslaughter in my mind. But I can't say I'm happy with the final judgment, but I do believe it was the just judgment of this jury, given the facts that were laid before them. And I'm just grateful they were able to lay emotion aside and truly find for an acquittal. And again, I hope someday we can reach a point in America where the color of skin does not seem to matter, and I'm starting to doubt my own hopes and dreams of that. But my prayers are with the Martin family. I hope they're okay. My prayers are with the Zimmerman family and their continued safety, and I guess that's about it.
Well, that was beautiful, Michael. Thank you. And I want to give the final word to Cheryl McCollum. She has been on this show daily, nightly, and has just been incredible. And I thank you, Cheryl. You have done so much for us and so much for everybody listening and for this show. You have done an amazing job at educating people. I want you to have the final thought on today, the day that George Zimmerman was found not guilty.
Well, I think my thought is, first of all, you are welcome. I appreciate everything you did for our students and also the honor of letting me and several of my colleagues be on with you. But, you know, I was told a long time ago that if you lose your parents, you're called an orphan. And if you lose a spouse, you're a widow or a widower. But if you lose a child, Tricia, there's no word for that. And the reason there's no word is because it's so unthinkable and unspeakable.
It's so too horrible to speak, yes.
Right. So in a few hours, I'll be heading to St. John's, and I will light a candle for Miss Fulton. I will light a candle for her so that she has comfort and peace. And I will light a candle that George Zimmerman remains safe and has whatever kind of semblance of a life he can possibly have. And then I will light a candle for the rest of us so that we can somehow, like Dwayne said, come together and learn from it. You know, but I started this journey with you saying there's not going to be any winners, and there's not. But I want to end on a funny note. To the big fat penis, you don't have that. Because it's 1 o'clock in the morning, sugar, after a Saturday night, and you're calling a show because you are alone.
There
so anyway,
you go.
If he had that item, he would not be alone.
That was priceless, Cheryl. I've grown to love you.
Brilliant. Now that's a brilliant mind.
Can I get an amen? Can I get an amen, Dr. Jefferson?
Amen, amen, amen.
Amen. Thank you. Oh, God, we needed that one. Thank you so much.
Only Cheryl
would come up with that. Oh,
that's
everybody,
hysterical.
I just want to thank
I love
you
Trisha.
Very, very much.
Thank you so much.
I love you too, Michael. Thank you. And Dwayne, thank you. Dr.
Good night.
Jefferson.
Y'all stay safe.
We will. Cheryl, you stay safe. And thank you, everybody, for thinking of us. And I just want to remind our listeners tonight that Trisha's True Crime Radio is a separate entity. The opinions expressed here are of the hosts and the guests. We are completely separate from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. So in other words, if you get upset at something you hear on my show, you come to me. You don't take it out on the forums. You don't take it out anywhere else. Trisha's True Crime Radio, you come to me and we'll try and make you happy. Now, don't forget tomorrow night, our regularly scheduled show for 8 o'clock Eastern. Beth Karras will be here. Beth Karras, formerly of HLN, and I can't believe HLN laid her off. She is so brilliant and incredible, and she'll
but
be here.
She was back on tonight. Did you know that?
She was. Oh, she was?
She was
I didn't
back
know that.
On. She was on Nancy Grace. I was really
well,
happy to see her.
Yeah, they're probably doing is having her kind of like an independent contractor thing. We'll get into the details. We'll even ask her how much she makes tomorrow because, hey, we can. Anyway, she's coming on tomorrow, and I have a feeling she's going to give us all kinds of inside scoop, I hope, that she couldn't talk about before. That's tomorrow, 8 o'clock, Beth Karras. Michael from Minnesota will be here. Cheryl, you're always welcome to call in. I mean, you're part of the show now, and I do appreciate all of your help, and our thoughts and prayers do go to Trayvon's family, to the Zimmermans, to everybody who has been hurt by this case. Like Cheryl said, there are no winners, but hopefully we can learn from it. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Trish.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.